science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to another episode of ThinkWorks, the place where we like to come to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And today we're going to talk about a subject that sends most of us running to the hills with the heebie-jeebies because it's mathematics. But don't worry, because my guest and I are hopefully going to allay some of those fears, because really, you do matter whether you know it or not. Isn't that right, Stephen?
It is. Thank you, Darren, for inviting me along, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, so Steve, the Professor Lowe, is back in the studio with us. And you've been
that's
doing
the professor
math.
With a small p, by the way.
And as you can probably gather, we're not going to take this too seriously, but we just wanted to really talk about why math is so important and why you shouldn't be afraid of it. I think that's it in a nutshell.
It is, and whenever you look around you, right, without maths, you'd have nothing.
No.
And it sounds a bit heavy going, and we're going to try and explain what we mean by that. But it's everything you touch and see will be related to maths.
And we've got a quote for you. Now, we think it's by Augustin Louis Cauchy.
Cauchy. Yeah? It's Cauchy, yeah.
Yeah, we're English, so we're probably pronouncing that really incorrectly. And so apologies to our French or Belgian listeners. But he said, mathematics is the science of the infinite.
The thing is as well, and if you do know anything about maths or heard anything about maths, I mean, he was the father of what's called calculus. And without calculus, and I know it sounds a bit heavy going, but you would have no real or complex analysis. You would not be able to study anything in this world without the actual foundations of calculus.
Yes. We'll talk about a little bit more about how mathematics fits into the real world a little bit later. But we're going to look at why mathematics is seen as a universal language across cultures and even species when we start talking about aliens. Ooh. And we've also got a brief overview, therefore, of what the Voyager probes have done with using mathematics on board them. And we've got loads of other bits and pieces as well. But we're going to start with, I'll tell you what, Steve, I'll ask you a question. How did you get into maths in the first place?
Well, I did maths, obviously, we all had to do it. In the UK, it was GCSEs, O-levels, more than elementary school. But when I went to do A-level, I decided to take maths as a subject. And there was two main parts to it. There was applied maths and pure maths. Now, pure maths was quite, I think it was quite abstract at the time, but I got it and I could understand it. You know, it's about algebra and stuff like that. But then I went in to do applied maths and I just did not get that at all. And that deals with a lot of like the end results and working on practical solutions. There was like laws like Newtonian mechanics and there was stats and vectors. Quite complicated stuff for me.
Yeah.
However, I had a fantastic teacher, Mr. Brian Disney, his name was, and he spent countless hours with me after school, during lunch breaks, to get me through this.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, seriously, it's like over a couple of days, the penny dropped and I got it. And since that day, I just thought, I just love how this works.
Yeah.
That was the catalyst for me. Then I went to university and I did an engineering degree because of what I'd learned through maths.
Right. So, I mean, my journey was a very long and convoluted one. It took me 3 attempts to get my maths O level. And I had a maths teacher when I was aged about 12, I think it was. And he said to me, when you pick a career, pick one that doesn't involve maths because you're rubbish at it. And at the age of 12, I believed him.
But that's the anxiety thing coming out, which we can touch on later on.
It is. But the fact is, I do often look back at my choice of qualifications and career based on that, you know, I was rubbish at maths, and I really did believe it. And then a few years later, into my adulthood, I decided I wanted to do science qualifications through the Open University. And of course, there's a lot of mathematics in that. But they had a way, they had breakout books where I could talk about maths and follow the maths. And I suddenly understood where I was going with various equations, and before long I was calculating planetary orbits, I was looking at E equals mc squared, I was looking at the whole tectonic plate stresses and calculating movement on that, and I just suddenly realized that I wasn't crap at maths, my teacher was crap at teaching.
You get that a lot though, don't you?
Yeah,
you get that a lot. Yeah. But the thing is, and I've seen this before, and I've heard this before, some teachers who teach maths, they have their own issues with it as well.
Yeah.
And that actually comes across to the students, so they get nervous about it as well.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, it is all around us, and we're going to talk a little bit more about it. Maths can be very hard, but when you break it down into the subject matters and do it chunk by chunk, you will get it. We're not talking about, you know, astrophysics, and we're not talking about professor of maths. We're talking about just a normal person trying to understand what maths is.
Yeah, and that's where we were going to go with it. So we've broken down the episode really into little segments, and we'll now move into those and try to ease you through the journey. And we're going to go looking into the dim, distant past and talk about the universal language of mathematics and why the evolution of maths is also corresponding with the evolution of man's understanding of the world around him or her. And so what examples did you pick up from history?
Well, there's the Mayan people, Egyptians, Greeks as well. And if you think about how their culture actually evolved over the years, they've built like the Mayan temples, the Egyptian pyramids. That is all to do with maths. I mean, and to be fair, it was like a sacred art to them. And they actually connected it with the gods. You know, so how they actually then used their numbering system to work out how to do a pyramid, what, 3,000-4,000 years ago? It was still maths, but how did they do that?
Well, and when you look at, you mentioned the Mayans, and with the Babylonians as well, the Mayans created a base 20, I think it was, and the Babylonian Empire a base 60 numerical system, which they used with incredible accuracy to predict eclipses, to keep track of the seasons, to map the heavens. And this is all long before our lot were really kind of coming out the caves. I mean, it's, when you think about it, their ability to understand mathematics far exceeded Europeans until after the Dark Ages.
But it seemed like the rhythm they have with the, they used to have the rituals.
Yeah.
That was all based on the chanting, which was numbers and time and space, which maths is all about as well. And it's how they did those things. It's just phenomenal.
And then you mentioned the Egyptians as well. I mean, the geometry that the Egyptians created to, I mean, you can't get a piece of paper width in between some of those pyramid
and blocks, isn't it?
It's just wow. Yeah. When you think about it, absolutely superb stuff. Now, they were creating, I mean, this is long before, of course, the Greeks came along and the Western European movement began to look at creating some of the mathematical constructs that we all know today. Geometry was, they were using these skills before we'd even given them a term. Now, on the Western side of things, of course, the Greeks did really become pioneers for developing mathematical constructs with Pythagoras and Euclid and the work that they did on all kinds of geometry and all that kind of stuff. The fascinating thing for me that I discovered when we were doing this is it's only relatively recently that we had zero as an actual thing, as a number. And that really came out of India, the work that they did. They were the ones that came up with the concept of zero as a placeholder and a number. And they also, that revolutionized algebra and arithmetic everywhere, but they also brought negative numbers into the field as well.
I didn't know that.
No, it's just, and we don't, I mean, this is the problem. We have a kind of like a Western snobbery, unfortunately, and I think that is there, but we're missing the fact that a lot of these civilizations and a lot of the different cultures were developing at a pace and at a skill level far beyond anything that we had in the West at the time. And I think it was India that also came up with the concept of infinity. It's just like, whoa. So if you look at all these different civilizations, they were all developing their own kind of mathematical constructs. But what was cool was the other civilizations could then understand what those constructs were.
And I think as well, over time as well, we talk about being a common language as well. The symbols are the same in most cultures, right? The numbering system is the same in most cultures. The language is not, but that transcends it all. And I think, you know, whether you've got a geographical border, even time to some extent, the language of mathematics underpins the realities.
Yeah.
And we all use those as a building block to understand what is real around us and beyond.
I mean, let's face it, folks, just from when your alarm clock goes off in the morning through to you scheduling what you want to record on your DVR. Yes, I'm old, I know. But whatever it is you want to do with that, you're using mathematics.
You are, and not only that, though, but if you think of, I'll just use some silly little things, like they've got the spirals of the galaxy, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know, and then we've got something as small as a snowflake, yeah? It's the same to everybody seeing it.
Yes.
Right? And everybody who's analysing that, it's the same thing. The symmetry of it, yeah? And it's all based on the maths, on maths. And I think we use maths as well to understand nature and understand science and astronomy as well.
Yeah, I mean, maths becomes, I think it's really good. Learning maths, even at the most basic level, helps us to become people that can analyse situations that might not necessarily involve mathematics, but the process of logically assessing and looking and sorting, that has come from doing maths.
And I was going to say that, it's a logical thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it also gives you an idea to explore theories as well, which is why when you look at maths, there's not one country the best at maths, right?
No.
It just transcends everything because it fascinates all different people and cultures throughout the world.
Yeah,
and it's all around us.
And it doesn't matter what language you speak.
Exactly.
Because 1 + 1 does equal 2 in any country. Although some bright spark, I think, once did a 4,000 equation thing that proved that 1 + 1 can sometimes not equal 2.
Well, that'd be some weird...
some theorem. But even that, I mean, it's all there.
But even that, and whether I agree with or not is a different question, but it's still pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
And that's what the logical mind, that's what the human brain will do. It will say, well, why does 1 + 1 = 2? I'm going to try and prove something else. And it just comes back to proofs.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Because if you cannot prove it, well, how do you know it's not real?
Exactly.
It's about human logic and thoughts, isn't it? And how it does impact your everyday life, or you use it in your everyday life.
Without even thinking about it. I mean, this is the key thing. This is why I love it when people say, I'm no good at maths, and you go, well, do you cook? And do you bake? And
do you drive?
You're using maths all the time. You might not consciously think, I am using mathematics now. But driving is a perfect example because your brain is automatically assessing angles and speed and movement. And without the mathematical coordination that's going on subconsciously in your head, then you wouldn't be able to drive.
Exactly. And the only thing when you're looking at maths and on a paper, or you're actually studying it or working it out, you're just using those logical things in your brain, those connections they have, to actually work out a problem or to solve a problem. So, you know, you're using it every single day of your life.
Yeah, it's great. It does amuse me when I hear people say that they can't do maths.
It's like, I can't speak French. I cannot speak French.
Yeah.
I can't even speak English sometimes. But, yes. but the thing is, we all do maths.
Yeah.
Everybody in this world will do maths at some level.
I mean, from budgeting and finance, to cooking and baking, to navigation, to driving, to just, as we've said, programming your DVR.
But the thing is... And people who say, oh, I don't know maths, so I dismiss it. Don't dismiss it, because certainly for the younger generation, without maths, you wouldn't have your mobile phones. You would not have your game consoles. You would not have your games to play on them. It's all comes through maths.
Yeah, because coding is binary.
Yeah, binary.
And that comes out of this whole idea of yes, no, on, off, which is just the ultimate building block of just about every piece of technology we have.
Absolutely, yeah. But it's also essential, like, for employment. understanding silly little things like your wages. Honestly, you're using it all the time. Now, there's lots of complex things go behind when you get your pay slipped, how that's worked out.
Yeah.
But you having to understand what's on there is important to you.
It is. And taxes, dare we say. Now everyone really is running to the hills, scared out of their wits. But yeah, you have to know enough to be able to make sure that you are paying the right amount of tax.
You don't have to be a maths expert to be successful in this world, but it will help you understand things around you a lot better.
It gives you more control in your life if the more that you can understand maths. And so what we're saying is your everyday life, you might have been using all these skills and applications unconsciously. It would be even more productive for you if you actually decided that you're going to do a little kind of side course on mathematics, and we highly recommend that.
100%, and you don't have to get into the super advanced stuff.
No.
You know, I mean, when people say, oh, I don't get maths, or I'm very anxious about it, it's because you think it's hard, or you think you're going to fail, and, oh, I just can't do maths. The thing is, you're focusing on the end result being perfect all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's just about, actually, okay, let's get growth. Put your focus on, let me just get better at this little bit, and build those blocks, yeah? Celebrate your successes you get by doing something analytical, mathematical, to get to a solution, and your confidence will grow.
Yeah. And it just, again, make an audit of when you want to do your maths.
My example at A level, I did not get applied maths. I was going to ditch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This teacher, he said, little steps, and it was repetitive. Repeat, 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 and eventually it will click.
Yeah. So, and if you make an audit of all the tasks that you do, if you consciously sit down and just write them down, all the things that you do that involve some kind of adding up, subtracting, calculation, problem solving, setting, you know, as we've said, everything from how much change do you get when you hand over a tenner for a bag of sweets, and all the way down to how many grams of this do you put into pudding mix, and I've never actually mastered making puddings, but that's by the by. And so you've got all that kind of stuff going on, and just make a list, and then you look at it and you'll think, hey, I do maths. Maybe I should ought to do it consciously.
I'll give you an example. A builder may not be a maths expert whatsoever, may never even done maths at a school, but when he builds a house, he don't turn up in the morning and build a house.
No.
He puts his foundations down, right? Puts his services in. He builds a wall, right? He does the insides. And that's what maths is. You do it a step at a time. You build on the things you've learned previously and then do the next step. Yeah. And I think through that, you get more of a analytical brain and you're able to tackle more things in life as well as just academia.
Yeah, agreed. And so we're very much about, you know, don't look at your experiences in the classroom as children growing up. It's all about your everyday life experiences now and building on that. And then just learning a little bit more about how mathematical skills can assist you really in taking a little bit more control in your day-to-day life.
Exactly. And if you think about other disciplines it interacts with, you know, we've already just talked about the building and stuff like that, but algebra, as an example, is used by the aid agencies to work out where water needs to go to third world countries and how often that water may get contaminated and how sick people may get.
Yeah.
And they use that then to actually refine the water to target areas. It's things like that.
Yeah.
Simple things like algebra will save people's lives. Well, it sounds silly, but it will.
Yeah, and look at Amazon, for example, and FedEx and UPS. They use mathematical constructs based on the foraging behaviour of ants, believe it or not, to actually work out the best way to get things from A to B to C. It's just their logistical programmes are insane when you consider that. But getting that, you order something on Amazon, other shops, online shops are available, but you know what I mean. You do that, it arrives the next day, the calculations that have gone into their system to be able to do that, every single piece of that from you clicking that mouse click is maths.
Exactly. Now, I know a lot of you guys will go, well, I press the button and it arrives. And that's great. Maybe that's all you need to know. And that's what you are, that's fine. But if you want to delve a bit deeper, and that's what this podcast is about, is understanding maths better, you might think, well, how does that get to me? Because that's what Newton did, you know. People say, oh, the apple falls.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that. He went, why does
the apple fall?
And that's the questions you've got to ask. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science, you know, it really is not. But it just gives you an insight to what is behind how this world operates.
Yeah. And we mentioned earlier about aliens and mathematics, and the reason for that is in the 70s we launched the Voyager spacecraft, Voyager 1 and 2, who are now travelling beyond the reaches of our solar system towards, and actually heading towards, another galaxy.
We say aliens, yeah, right, and people like think of little green men and switch off. Yeah. It's intelligent extraterrestrials. Yeah. That's what we should say there. It's not like a little green man.
No. The reason why we mention that is because one is, both the Voyager craft include gold-pressed records, and on those records, because gold decays, I think it's got one of the longest decay. The Earth will have burnt to a cinder with the sun
the half-life of it and stuff like that.
Before the gold decays. So they've inscribed on that a lot of basic mathematical principles and equations, including the breakdown of the hydrogen atom and the way that the pulsars are calculated as a map, so that aliens that find... I'm not sure this is a good idea, but so aliens that find it have a map to find out where it came from. Yeah, we've all seen Independence Day, but that's by the by. But we've got those messages out there, and they chose maths for the simple reason that 1 + 1 = 2 here is going to equal 2
exactly
everywhere else.
So what they did, obviously, if you talk about intelligent life form out there, we are making certain assumptions that they actually do have their own kind of numbering coding system. So we made it reasonably simple for anybody else to understand. It was like, initially our numbers were just a set of dots, which if they could count, they'd understand that, and they could equate it maybe to some of their values. Then we did some binary stuff, and then we actually used our ordering numbering system as well. And it was to try and say, okay, and there was instructions as well, weren't there?
Yeah.
Which, like, the graphical instructions,
yeah,
that obviously...
Geometric shapes as well.
Exactly, to try and understand how to interpret this.
I just think it's fascinating that, again, something... I mean, the maths involved in sending those spaceships safely through the solar system in the first place...
is beyond our comprehension.
It's just... Yeah. And when you think about the computing power that they didn't have back in the 70s...
Well, you've got to think that there's something called the three-body problem.
Yeah.
Which has been around for hundreds of years. And that's about how the sun, a planet, and a third object, which could be a satellite,
yeah,
will react to each other's orbit and each other's gravitational pull.
Yeah.
And it was that eventually got us to think about how we could send things out into outer space. It Makarovich? Makarovich or something?
Something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, he actually decided... He worked for UCLA?
Yes.
University of California, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And they just got this new superpower computer. And he was fascinated by this. And he went into this and put loads of data sets in, built massive complex algorithms to prove that you could use a planet's gravitation to send an object
as a slingshot,
at a super speed into space. And it's been, honestly, 25-year-old, I think he was,
yeah,
in 1961.
Yeah, if you've ever seen Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, they slingshot around the sun to travel back in time. But it's that kind of thinking, yeah. But actually, that brings us on to a nice little link there, because we talked about the Voyager spacecraft, and yes, intelligent life out there in the universe might well be the stuff of science fiction, although let's be fairly honest, intelligent life here on planet Earth is fairly limited at the moment. But we've got all kinds of stuff that isn't science fiction that's happening right now because of mathematics. So what we got coming in the future?
I think it's already quite advanced at the moment, and some of these terminologies won't be new, but it's what they're going to do with them going forward that actually interests me. I mean, the biggest thing at the moment is AI.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere, and it's on the internet. You do a search and AI will come up with some stuff for you, yeah. And the idea of AI is to try and create a machine, let's say, to mimic a human intelligence. So therefore, that AI learns from your data, makes decisions on that knowledge. But the building blocks of AI is maths.
Yeah.
Absolutely maths. And there are, for me, there's three key areas, I think, that's going to improve. And I've worked in one of them at a management level, not at a very technical level. You've got machine learning, which is all about predictive modelling and using data and stuff like that. That is getting so clever now. People are talking about it predicting stock prices, your spam emails, even suggesting things like, these are the next Netflix things you should watch. age.
Right.
Based on your intelligence, based on what you've watched before, based on your interests.
Yeah. And they're capturing that data
all the time.
So when you're having a conversation that you think is private, when you've got your telephone on, Amazon devices or Google devices smart devices in the room.
It's getting really clever, and it uses a lot of what's called predictive modelling about that machine learning. Yeah. An example, Darren, if I may. I work for a company. Can I name the company?
Yeah.
Called SAS. About 12 years ago, working for a large retail company, supermarket in this country, and we had very advanced predictive modelling, really, really clever algorithms, and we were predicting the outcome of sales, customer relationships, and then using that to say, right, what's that company going to stock on those shelves to make sure when that customer, and then how many times that customer's been into that shop, what they are buying to make sure their shelves are stocked with their favourite goods. Understanding what they're not selling and they don't order that stock, so it's not stuck in their warehouse and costing them money, and then improving their revenues and profit via that. And this is 12 years ago, and it's quite advanced at the time.
Yeah.
So goodness know where it's now and where it's going to go to.
I just think this whole field of AI, I mean, we'll come back to this, I think, as an episode in its own right. But I think this whole data mining and data protection issues that it opens up, because we've already got the musicians and artists up in arms and writers, because they want to just plunder every single piece of information, whether it's written, digital, music, and then just create their own pieces of work using that work. And so, of course, there's royalties that hasn't been sorted out. There's the whole idea of where we go in terms of just how much data do we allow these big corporations to actually own about us. And it comes back to me, I mean, this is an interesting one for American corporations. If the American pharmaceutical companies can actually trademark the human genome, so that when you're doing any kind of medical treatment that involves it, you've got to pay a royalty, then I'm sorry, guys, that is surely as individuals whose data you're stealing to create your best-selling tools, you owe us some money.
But that's where that's where technology. Yeah. And we are digressing slightly, but maths underpins that technology. That's where it's not always used for the best. I mean, one of the other things as well, I'll call it a neural network. Now, we all know about how the brain works. Well, most of us do, and they've got all these various things flaring off and neurons and that flaring away. The idea of neural networks is try and simulate through AI how your human brain works.
Yeah.
Which sounds a bit scary, but the thing is, by doing this and understanding how that works, they can process the information better and use our brains to improve AI. And by that, you might think it sounds like a bit scary, but it will improve things like speech recognition, which will help people with disabilities.
Yes.
It will actually help with the hearing as well, and improving hearing aids, so our brain understands the actual sounds going into our brain. So there are lots of good stuff coming. So I think neural science, neural networks, that will be a very important move forward in the future.
I agree. I agree with that. And also, I mean, some of the work's been going on, pioneering work. There's a robot called, now let me get this straight, I think it's called COG. And he's been learning through these neural networks that have been created by various scientists and robotic scientists for the last 20-odd years, 30 years. And they reckon, certainly from the last time I checked in on COG, that he had the learning ability and understanding of a 7-year-old. He'd been learning for about 20 years, but he had those neural networks were improving all the time. And it becomes almost like geometric curve, that as the improvements hit, the understanding hits, the understanding creates new neural pathways, and it's the same in a neural network with these machines. And so all the time these are improving, and I think it's a fascinating topic that we're going to come back to again as an episode in its own right.
I thought it'd be good, yeah. But just to bring it back again, I mean, it sounds a bit highbrow, but underpinning all these things we're talking about is the maths. Very complex maths in some cases. Yeah. But you've got to think, things like, there's another thing called reinforcement learning, which is using highly sophisticated artificial intelligence that will make decisions based on dynamic environments.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. If you play a game on a console, you play Call of Duty, you play Fortnite, whatever you play, yeah, some of your characters, right, which are artificial, will react to the environment they're in. So by actually introducing and getting better on this reinforcement learning, your games you play will get better, get more interactive. So that relates to all you younger generation out there who enjoy this stuff. So when you say, oh, what's maths? Well, that is it. You're seeing it.
It's your entertainment.
Exactly.
It's everything. And I think that's what we're trying to get at with this episode. So we were, when we were initially thinking about this episode, we thought we might go through some really famous theorems. But to be honest, you need to have a blog, I think, to talk about the theorems so that you can see, you can follow the logical progression of the actual equations, which we're going to keep simple, but I don't think it really comes across on radio. So it has to be visual. So, but what we thought we would do is just, I think the one mathematical equation that just about everybody in the world will have heard of is Einstein's famous E equals mc squared. Now, we're not going to go into the full kind of detail about the about it and how it all works and everything, but we just thought we'd explain what E equals mc squared actually means on its most basic level and where it's applied.
Yeah, we need about years and thousands of books to explain it.
Yeah, I mean, there's been whole books just written about this one equation, but Einstein was such a genius, and he just asked questions, and he came up with this famous equation as part of the work he was doing, obviously, through relativity and his experiments, his mind experiments, I should say, on relativity. And what it means is that a very tiny amount of mass can expend a great deal of energy when it's aggravated, assaulted with an input.
It is, but it's also the fact that mass and energy have the same physical entity and can be changed into each other, which was at the time unheard of.
And that's obviously the immediate ramification, and this is an equation that Einstein often said he wished he'd never came up with, was the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Because they realised that a very small amount of mass could actually create a massive explosion.
Of energy, yeah.
So E equals mc squared, and it's just the whole thing about relativity is, I think we ought to do an episode on relativity.
Yeah, because I don't think this is going to do it justice.
No, I don't think it is. We just wanted to touch upon the fact that you might not want to do maths, but you don't even realise that you are doing it, or you might want to know about maths, but you don't know where to start. Or you may think, I'm not even interested in maths, but I bet you've heard of E equals mc squared.
Mm, yeah, exactly. Even I have.
So it's just there. And that's the reality. And I think that's what we wanted to get across with this episode, really, is that the reality is maths is all around you. It's in everything that you do, whether you consciously do it or not. But it's there. And we want you to actually go ahead now and start to really think about maybe consciously using mathematics or learning more about mathematics.
Exactly. Because this podcast is not targeted at professors of mathematics or even students of mathematics.
No.
It's the Joe blogs like us who maybe have an interest in it or maybe don't understand as much as they think to have a little look at it and think, well, you know, maybe I do actually understand it a little better than I thought, and to take that next step to look into, well, how does it impact and affect my everyday life? Because it surely does.
I mean, even just the anecdote about India coming up with the idea that zero was an actual physical number, and we didn't have that. That blows my mind. It's like, but surely zero's been around
forever.
It's always
been there, and it hasn't. No, I know.
No.
I know.
Absolutely mind-blowing. So what are the bits and pieces that are we going to conclude with then?
Well, obviously, we've talked about machine learning algorithms, obviously, and how we're using data sets, which will give you faster processing. But there's something else coming. It's called topology.
Oh, yeah.
Which studies how a object, anything, it could be anything, how it moves, how it can be stretched, how it can be pushed together and everything else. And people are using that concept now to understand things like leaves on a plant. Like, there are very lots of different plants in this world, but they all have a very similar structure of their leaves, depending on what size they may be, what the shape and colour could be, and where the origins are. I think they're also going to, by moving forward with that, it's going to help things like biology, data sciencing. We're still now, and very clever doctors and scientists are looking at how things like protein molecules are shaped, because that will help with things like blood disorders, could help with stuff like cancers. Mm. And understanding how all this works comes back to how maths is going to interpret nature.
And the futures, I think, the kind of research that people are doing now, whether it's in computing science, whether it's in cosmology, whether it's in the whole idea of building a bridge and tunnels under the ocean, it's just, it's all there.
How do you make it safer? How do you do it quicker?
Yeah.
What materials are you going to use? You know, just everything. And I think it, understanding maths, even at a lower level, and just trying to take yourself and learn a little bit more, it's going to foster more innovation in yourself, not just in the human race and in the world, but in yourself. It's going to push some of your boundaries as well and actually get you more critical thinking about things.
Yeah,
which I personally think will make you more analytical. Yeah. And for me, it doesn't make you a better human being, but it makes you more you're thinking
and rather than reacting.
Exactly, and I just think it will help as people.
Yeah, and I think that's what the point that we made at the beginning was. If you learn a little bit more about how the maths that you are using actually works, and so you are consciously able to apply that maths rather than just do it subconsciously, it means that you'll be able to have more control of your life. And given what's happening outside of our control, with everything that's going on with geopolitics, with the economy, where a simple sudden shortage of wheat in one country can cause problems throughout the rest of the world, all that, if it's out of your control. But if you can take some control back by using consciously mathematical approaches to some problems or to your day-to-day life, then surely that's got to be a good thing.
And understanding why that is happening,
yeah,
or how does it happen,
yeah,
I think it allows you to make more sense of the world, good and bad,
yeah,
or what's going on.
So as ever, folks, before I conclude with the usual statement, is there anything else you'd like to finish off with, Stephen?
Only thing I would say is, as heavy going as you may think it is, do not underestimate maths or the power of it. Do not shy away from it. Embrace it. You might think it's tough at some stages, but just persevere with it.
Yeah.
And I've said before, it's all around us. Now, there's a very famous person, Mr. Galileo himself, yeah?
Yes.
He said this, and I think this is true. Mathematics is the language with which God has written the universe, and that means everything around us.
There was someone else came up with a meme recently as well, which I cannot remember the scientist's name, and I'm really sorry. If I find it, I'll put it in the forum later. And you're just saying that, it's just reminded me of what he said. Now, I think this particular scientist is also quite religious, and so he'd said God used very complex mathematics when he created the universe. It's just, yeah. Do you know what I mean? So whether you're secular or religious, or whether you believe in a little bit of both, or that whatever your beliefs are, one thing is constant across everything, and that is mathematics.
Absolutely. Every single human being uses it every day, sees it every day.
Yeah. And it don't lie. Apart from, you know, when you have some bright sparks.
One plus one equals three. Yeah.
Anyway, so thank you very much for listening. As always, there will be a corresponding forum post for today's episode, which is darreninform.com/thinkworksforum. Go in there, you'll find the post that's connected to this episode. And why don't you tell us what your favourite mathematical theorems are, and we'll actually share some of ours as well. And also tell us how you feel about maths. Is it something that you would like to know more about? If you want to know more about it, put that in the forum as well. We'll actually send you to some of the institutions that can help you. And you got Learning Direct, for example, and other learning systems here in the UK, online ones as well. We just want to get you interested and intrigued, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So thanks for listening. We haven't bored you too much.
And as always, look after yourself and each other.
Take care.
Would like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for @darreninform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson, and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to Think Works, the podcast for thinkers.